Welcome to the Content and Media Matters podcast, a series of interviews with key leaders throughout the industry, all brought to you by the Content and Media team at Newco, a specialist global recruitment and executive search firm.
Welcome to the Content and Media Matters podcast. Your hosts today are me, Henry Johnson, Senior Consultant, and Abby Burnham, Associate Consultant. And we're delighted today to be joined by Gauthier Dumont, the Vice President of Sales for Content Publishers North America at Quill. Gauthier began his career working as a video engineer for Carpe Diem, working across their VOD encoding platform. Following on from this, working for Nintendo before beginning his long stint with Level 3 Communications, where he held numerous different positions across sales engineering, solutions architecture, and then moving into a principal CDN sales role. Fast forward 5 years later, Gauthier is now the Vice President of Sales for Quill and is loving it. Welcome to the show, Gauthier.
Thank you guys for having me. Good to be here.
Brilliant. And to get us started, we always like to ask people the same question. How and why did you first get into the content and media industry?
It's been something that I've been passionate about since I was a teen. So when I was a teenager, I spent my time watching a TV. We had very limited streaming in the late 90s at that time. And my parents keep saying, like, you need to do engineering, you need to do something else. And I realized that my only passion was TV. So I studied, I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to work in TV. I spent all my vacations when I was in high school, like sophomore and senior in high school, interning for the French television for free, where I was learning a little bit about all the different jobs, like from production on sets to video editing. Being someone that hates being cold and shooting outside in the street in the middle of the night, I decided that video editing was going to be the way in a nice AC'd office. So I started learning video editing, did a school for video editing, and then the turn to streaming came basically by being fired. It's, you know, the random thing of life. So I know I'm talking to a bunch of Brits, but I don't know if you remember in 2002, the France got removed from the World Cup on the first round. And the network that I was working with lost a lot of money because France didn't push forward and basically decided to can all the TV shows that they had in production. And I was part of the TV shows that were canned, and I had to do something else. So I found a school that, you know, those French school apprenticeship that those you do half in the company, half at school, that was teaching me web development. And basically got an internship with a company, Carpe Diem, which was randomly a company doing the first video streaming platform in France. And they ended up saying, well, we'll teach you about the internet and streaming if you teach us about broadcast and, you know, how to properly manage a broadcast playout system and create channels and stuff like that. And that's how randomly I was able to still keep my passion about, you know, TV and online content, while in 2004 or 5 being one of the first person in France working on video streaming platform.
Oh, fantastic. It's so fascinating as it's always slightly different as well. I feel like no one person has the same answer. Well, I will now hand over to Abby, who's going to dig a little bit further into the past.
Yeah, thanks, Henry. And really interesting, Gauthier, to hear like the route that you kind of took into the industry. So interested also to kind of hear your answer to who would you say has been the biggest influence on your career?
There's several people. You know, I think like in your career, you meet like mentors, several. There's definitely been when I was in that French startup that got acquired by Nintendo, someone like Xavier Grégoire was now like a VP of Western Europe in Fastly, who's been pushing me towards becoming customer facing and sales. Derek Goff at Level 3, people like Jamie Miles, Michael Fay was at Disney now, but who was at Level 3, who got me to move to the US. Bill Wonduka, who's been probably my biggest mentor in the industry, pushing me to you know, learn more, be better, work with bigger customer in the US. And then later on in my career, like people, the French guys of Streamroot, like Pierre-Louis Theron, for example, that entrusted me to build my first big teams. It's been a lot of people.
Oh, incredible. And yeah, so important to have those mentors throughout your career. And you yourself have worked in many different leadership roles throughout your career, managing people across the globe. When working in these senior positions, what are the sort of key lessons that you've learned about leading international teams?
I would say adapt to the culture has been, to me, the challenge, right? Because obviously being born and raised and only moved to the US when I was 28, I had a French way of doing things, which is very hierarchical. It's very hard to say with a French accent, but you know, where the GM is gives order and you kind of execute, right? It's a top-down level of way of managing to the US version, which is way more collaborative and there's way more discussion. And then like when I moved in Asia, it was kind of like a potpourri of different culture, right? The way you work with Japanese team is going to be very different from the Singaporean team, very different from someone in Indonesia. There's all those different culture. And so being able, learning to accept that I was really bad at it initially, learning to accept that when you move to a new region, even if you have the model that worked in the US, when you move to Asia, that didn't work at all. And basically speaking to people and finding like allies in winning the organization. So talking to, you know, the GM of Japan when I was at CenturyLink, explaining me how to work with the team in Japan, you know, how you need to behave, how you need to communicate, feedback, positive or negative feedback, all of that. Do the same across the different countries that I mentioned. I think that was my biggest valuable lesson. Assume that I'm still a teenager, that I don't know anything, and that I need people to explain life to me.
No, that's so interesting. And yeah, completely get what you're saying about having to kind of adapt to different cultures and how different individuals work as well. And great to kind of find out a little bit more about your background in the space. But Henry, over to you to talk a little bit more about the present now.
Oh, thank you for sharing that, Gauthier. That's something that we'll take on ourselves as well, that ideology. Jumping ahead now to the present, I know, for example, with NAB, there was lots of talking points about this as well. Be keen to know from yourself, what is your take on the current state of the broadcast and media industry?
Well, there's a lot. To me, it's not what I would call a revolution, but there's an evolution happening right now where, in the past, if you look more on the streaming side, so my part, right, the kind of like the delivery side, I don't want to talk about, you know, the creation of channel, the fast industry, all of that, which is less of my expertise. But, you know, there were strong competition between the different providers, between the different protocols, the different technology, right? You had traditional CDN, you had peer-to-peer, you had niche CDN, you had multicast. All of that were basically had the idea that we're competing against each other to steal the traffic away. Right, or win the traffic away rather than stealing. I think that right now what we're seeing is a much more collaborative approach, right? Everyone is realizing that for our customers to be successful and for those new platforms to be successful, you're gonna need to have an alliance of the different technologies, the different providers, the different protocol. The cake is large enough so that everyone gets a consequent size, a slice of that cake, right? And what I'm seeing really over the past year, with project like Open Caching that we'll talk about, but also with among just our relationship among different providers, is that there's a much larger partnership, right? There's going to be integration between CDN and multicast. There's going to be integration within that I'm seeing right now, right? There's integration with new protocols, new ways of delivering content with traditional CDN. And everyone understands that if we want that model to be sustainable, and if we want people to consider the streaming and the media industry to be a serious competitor to broadcast and a replacement to broadcast, there needs to be better collaboration. So I think that's the bigger strain that I'm seeing. Everyone working in better intelligence and trying to make those platforms and our customers successful.
That's a really interesting perspective. I think that's one we've heard in a while as well, and agreeing with you there about that fresh side of things. And before we dive into our topic about CDNs, I'd be keen to know, trade shows are fully back now. How important do you think they are to the industry post-COVID? Do you think we could survive without them?
No, I mean, I think COVID has proven that. You know, I think a lot of us had ideas before COVID, right? Saying, well, maybe if we don't do trade shows, we'll be okay with our website and we can get like new opportunities coming. That I think COVID squashed that, and we all realized that trade shows, even though they're not, you know, the golden goose, play a very important role on several levels, right? People are more open to talk to you and you know, get away from their daily routine to spend time discovering about new technologies. So that definitely creates an angle to get more opportunities and more, you know, widen your network. I think what you were saying also about, you know, the state of the industry and getting a better idea of what's happening in the industry. You know, you can be on Twitter all day, you can follow your LinkedIn, you're still going to miss things, and you're going to miss insider information that you only get at trade shows. So I think they remain a very important part of our business. The balance is finding the right one, right? But when you find the right one, the one that fits your company, your industry, and what you're trying to get out of it, there's definitely like nothing like it.
Totally. And I think we are all such social beings as well, that I'm going out and about meeting with everyone and sustaining those relationships. We've been hinting at it already, but we're now going to jump ahead to our topic that matters, which this week is about the power of CDN. The reason that we chose this is because, as you know, due to the developments in demand from end users for that content, it's really increased for all of those guys such as yourself working within the field of CDN. And now there are different solutions around analytics, scalability, and advanced caching technology, which all help to facilitate these. But I'd be keen to hear from you, Gauthier. What sets Qlt apart from other CDN solutions?
So Qlt is basically the leader in open caching technology. So open caching technology is a different way of doing CDN. Traditionally, CDN have been relying on those big pubs, you know, all across the countries in the US or all over the globe, actually, that then leverage peering point and peering access to get access to the eyeball network and deliver content. Right? That has been working, but we've seen over the last few years bottlenecks appear, either on capacity, but most of the time, to be transparent, into that access to the eyeball networks, right? When you're on a Tuesday and you have like an iOS update and a Microsoft update and the Champions League at the same time, you're starting seeing serious congestion on the network. The way open caching changes that is by partnering with the ISPs and deploying caching architecture to a density and a granularity never seen before inside the ISP network. So to give you an idea, in networks like Verizon in the US, Qlt is going to have 450 pops within their network only for the US, and we're going to double that with Verizon Mobile, right? So there's definitely that notion of being able to bypass those traditional bottlenecks and get inside the ISP network. And then why are they allowing us to deploy within their network, right? It's the second part. It's the business aspect of open caching, which is we have a revenue sharing model. So which means that we're going to share a percentage of our revenue with the ISPs that has the deployment. So traditionally in CDN, you've been having three actors kind of like bumping heads, right? The content creators, the CDN, and the ISPs. And there's always been tension between the CDN and the ISPs because you send all that traffic to their network, but they're not seeing any revenue to be able to invest into growing their network, right? With 4K, 8K, all those fun stuff, it has been kind of like an exponential issue. Well, open caching says, no, we're going to share our revenue with you guys. So for the very first time, you have a change in that relationship where instead of being a kind of like adversarial relationship, the ISPs is now seeing CDN delivery and the delivery of the content provider's content as a revenue stream. So you're going to get a partnership. You're going to get engineering assistance. You're going to get support. You're going to get data, right? And that switch in relationship between the main actors is our main value at Qlt with open caching. And obviously the fact that you have such a density means that you have tremendous performances. It's not rocket science, it's simple physics, right? If I have 450 pops within any given network, well, I'm gonna be closer to the end user, I'm gonna be faster, and I'm gonna offer a better QoE to my content customers.
Truly fascinating, Gauthier. And touching on there, you mentioned their data. I'd be keen to know, how does data and analytics play a part in all of this now?
Well, I mean, in CDN world, and it's been going on for a few years now, but it's becoming even more, you know, important now. It's basically what we live or die from, right? There's no there's no notion of like, I love my salesperson or I love my account team, and therefore they're going to get 80% of the traffic, right? We're all subject to the algorithm now, and the algorithm rules our life, which means that basically most of the big platform, I mean, every single big platform, and now we're seeing that across smaller customers, are using client-side performance load balancing, where the companies that performs the best can get the most of the traffic. And now we've seen over the last few years transition also on the contract side to accommodate that ability to switch traffic massively without incurring any financial penalties for the customer, right? So analytics right now, the way we're judged is by our performances measured on the client device, and that decide if your company or your relationship with the content provider is successful or not. So data is something we use daily at Quote, mainly to know what we're doing, to know what we need to improve, what we need to focus on. If there's some places that we're performing extremely well, we're trying to understand why and replicate that across all different deployment. So everything is definitely data driven to this day.
No, fantastic to hear. And on that topic as well, we know from NAB about the fantastic partnership between Quilt and Cisco, and it's been great to see the success of this. But in your own words, what are some of the main benefits of this partnership?
Well, there's several. So first of all, Cisco has been a tremendous partner, making sure we had the means to enable the vision that Quilt has, which is being able to deploy across all the major ISPs all over the planet, making sure we were getting business technical support, and Cisco has been a tremendous partner on that. There's also the ability to push. Cisco has been allowing us to know we're past just simply caching and start making those open caching edge into open compute, basically, and being able to run application at the edge. And Cisco has been tremendous in that effort, pushing us in that effort. And then there's also the benefit of having an organization like Cisco, who's been a leader in the broadcast space, who's been a leader in the media space for so many years, that has been able to help us on my side personally, on the sales and the business development side, making sure we had the right resources, we had the right contact, we had the right network, and they've been amazing into opening their organization to make sure we were successful.
Brilliant. No, thank you very much for sharing, Gauthier. And it's fascinating to hear all about that and then the things past, present and future as well. Our next section is something I think we can all agree is really important and we need to talk about as often as possible. And that is diversity and inclusion. Abby, handing over to you.
Yes, thanks, Henry. And always really keen to kind of get insights from leaders in the industry, such as yourself. What can leaders be doing to improve diversity throughout their organizations?
Well, I mean, what we're seeing at Quilt right now is with the idea that you're a global company, you're going to need to have that global employee base represented, right? Which means you always want to have diversity. You always want to make sure that you have people that reflect the diversity of your customers. I know at Quilt we've been having we have offices all over the globe, from the Middle East to Asia to Europe to US to Latin America, and we have that potpourri of talents, right, coming from all those different regions working together. Now the funny thing also that I'm seeing that is very exciting with the diversity effort within Quilt is that because everyone now works on those global accounts, those global media accounts. You learn from the, you know, I was talking earlier about the different culture and the different ways. Well, you learn that within a big media company or customers, there's also that diversity. There's also that globalism. There's also those teams that are located all over the world. Some, you know, some engineering team are going to be in Asia, in Latin America, in Europe. Some, you know, you're going to have all that mix. And being able to have that diversity within the company allows you to learn from your colleague, you know, as I was saying earlier, or to work, be efficient, or to be a good provider to your customers by learning the specificities of the way you work, about the culture, and all those different topics that makes you a better solution for your customers. So I like the way To, you know, we've seen a lot of diversity. We see that, you know, in every RFP from our customers. They want to see work with diverse suppliers and diverse providers. And making sure that we get that represented within the company has been like one of the key focus in all the companies I work for.
No, great point, and love what you're saying there about your customers seeing that representation within the organization as well. And you've touched on it a little bit there, but what are some of the sort of key benefits that you've seen from having more diverse organizations?
It makes the company more successful. So, you know, from a very selfish standpoint, from a business development standpoint, being able to have people all over the world that understand the culture, that comes from the same background as our customers, that are able to create those relationships, to have, you know, to have a long-term relationship with our content customers is key. I mean, there's, you know, a French person is going to have a tough time doing business in Japan, right? And I've done that for a few years living in Asia, and it's a challenge, and you're never going to get that same level of relationship that someone from Japan is going to have, right? And then there's different organization. There's you know, a lot of media platform right now that are focusing on diversity audience, and you need to make sure that you have someone who understands their need, who understands where they're coming from. So really, yeah, that's going to be the key to be successful as an organization. If you don't reflect the diversity of your customers, you're only going to be able to target and work with a very small section of your possible markets.
Such a good point, and so important to have all those different cultures and different mindsets involved in your organization, the decisions that you're making as well. Time to bring it a little bit more back to focus on yourself. And keen, I think, to find out a little bit about what you're like outside of work. How would you describe your perfect weekend?
That's a really good question. You know what? It was actually one of the interview questions we were asking back when I was at Streamroot before we got acquired by CenturyLink. That was we had a half an hour section about that kind of questions. What do you do on your free time? You know, and it's important because when you work in a sales team, global sales team, you're going to travel a lot. You're going to take the plane. You're going to be stuck in a metal box for, you know, 16 hours going to Singapore. You need to make sure that you have some you know, affinity with the people you're going to be with. So I would say my perfect weekend, it's going to depend on the season. So I'm going to give you two answers. Obviously, I made the conscious decision of moving to the US and living in Denver, Colorado, when we have the mountains. So a perfect weekend in the winter is going to be picking up my two girls with my wife from school on a Friday afternoon at 3:30 p.m. Driving, we have a small place in the mountain. So driving straight up to the mountain, going to have a nice dinner when we arrive, and then going basically skiing and snowboarding the entire weekend. Typically what we do is that on Saturday, they're in the local ski club, and my wife and I get to ski together, drink margaritas at lunch, and really enjoy our time, just the two of us. And then on Sunday, taking the girls and having like a family outing. So that's going to be the perfect weekend on the winter time. And in the summertime, it's going to be a little bit different. I think we like to travel and explore the US. My wife is a really big fan of road trips. So we typically try to go somewhere, book a, you know, a cute hotel in New Mexico. We went to South Dakota last week for the first time. We went to Wyoming. I like discovering the Midwest in America. I think that, you know, to me, that reminds me of the movies and those small towns. It's I'm always a kid when it comes to that. It's entering the only bar you can find in a small town and you know, chat with everyone, to the despair of my wife, who say, are you really going to talk to every single person in that bar? But that's that kind of perfect weekend. Like, I think, you know, I'm in the US because I fell in love with that country, and discovering all those places is definitely my, where I spend my weekends.
Oh, incredible. That sounds ideal. And definitely, one of my favorite answers that we've had to that question as well. But yes, Henry, handing over to you for our quick fire round.
Fantastic. Right. So Gautier, no clues here. Going to dive right in. Window or aisle seat?
Window, always.
Morning or evening person?
In between, I think with the kids, I'm gonna say evening person.
LinkedIn or Twitter?
Twitter. I'm addicted.
Christmas or your birthday?
Christmas.
Swimming pool or the ocean?
Ocean, always.
Favorite family vacation spot?
That's a tough one. Wait, I need to make sure I keep my family after answer. I'm gonna say Japan. Japan for the city, and then I'm gonna stay with Bali, the north side of Bali, the nature side for beach vacation.
Oh, fantastic. And favorite sport to watch?
Formula One. My dad worked at Renault his entire career. And so if you were not watching Renault Formula One, you were kicked out of the family. So I think I'm agreeing with that.
No, that makes sense. And last one before I hand over to Abby for our final question. Espresso or latte?
Espresso.
Nice.
Beautiful. And we always ask the same question to round up the podcast, which is, what is one piece of advice you would give to someone who's entering the industry?
One piece of advice, I would say to talk to people. I think like my career, if we can call it a career, but let's call it a career. It's always make me feel very old to say my career. I would say it has been a succession of luck and encounters, right? I didn't come from an Ivy League college. I was doing video editing first, and then meeting people, discussing, having options and having people telling you about what is possible within the industry, other than, you know, your narrow field of vision that you had because you don't know anything better, I think has been the key and is the main advice that I would give. Like, you know, I think as Henry, you were saying, we're social animal. It's a small industry. Everyone is passionate about it. I think we're making cool things, right? It's something that your kids, when they get in school, can talk about proudly about their father, making sure that you can watch the latest Disney cartoon or movie. It's something that is fun. And so making sure like you attend those company events, attend those trade shows, you know, just go have a beer with people and talk will probably make more for your career than, you know, anything else.
Brilliant. I will go to you. Thank you so much. That brings us to the end. It was a pleasure having you on. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. And I look forward to catch up at the next trade show.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you enjoyed it, please do subscribe and give us a rating. It really helps these stories to be found and enjoyed by more people. For more information about NewCo, we can be found at www.newco-group.com. That's NEUCO-group.com.